Yo.
Hey, Doug, I think we should do the intro and outro next week, but I just wanted to say hey.
Sunfest this time around, I don't know if it was because of who the band was, or what, but or at least the main band, or maybe because when we went last year, we went on a Thursday night, and this was Saturday night. But there were a lot more people there. They seemed a lot more fucked up. And just on, like, all sorts of drugs. And, like, the drug use was not hidden at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like at the Weezer one, you know, you may smell some pot or something like that. But this one, you see like people with like bongs passing it around in circle and like people clearly on like ecstasy and like hallucinogens and just, you know, just like dancing in a way that you don't dance to MGMT, especially to some of their songs.
Well, when we went a year ago, yeah, we went on like a Thursday. There was like nobody there for most of the time, and then until Weezer came on, and it was like, yeah, it was pretty chill. And then we went on Sunday. Me and Michelle went on Sunday to see Flogging Molly, and it was the complete opposite. It was, and there was no drug use, but it was just much more packed. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, very packed, and then, you know, people are just drinking all day,
right?
And yeah, we actually like had time to. You know, I was with my girlfriend and my sister and her fiance. And so, like, we ended up, like, when you're with couples, you're, like, more likely to look at the shitty art. And
yeah, the art stands in the middle with, like, dolphins and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of dolphin-themed stuff. A lot of, you know, boating-themed stuff. Kim got a couple candles made out of beer bottles.
Oh, good.
Which is probably it was like the most creative stuff there, and it was still just some dude who poured candle wax into beer bottles. And
well, have you ever been Art Beat on like South Beach? I don't know if it's called Art Beat, but they have this big art show on there, and it's nothing but that.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, you know, you have to give somebody who like that, who's, you know, just doing whatever it takes to do what they love. I mean, obviously they really love, you know, painting dogs on plates and putting clock pieces on there and making their dog plate clocks. But, you know, they really have a joy for that. And, you know, some people like stuff like that. But it's funny to hear them talking about their, like about the buyers and stuff like that, and to have them be like cranky about like people not taking their art prices seriously. It's like, what do you mean only $200 for one of these, you know, dog art, dog plate clocks? This is a $300 plate clock.
Well, have you seen Exit to the Gift Shop?
No, what is it? The Banksy
documentary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to see that. It's all about art, and it has a lot to do with art prices. So I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, that's really funny. It's interesting. It does kind of tie into music videos a little bit, because you know, music video directors as well, they're having to kind of place a price on their art.
Mm-hmm.
And like you'll see in Ben's interview, you know, a lot of times he was, you know, he was thinking about that stuff going into his, you know, direction process, is, you know, what things are going to be cheaper, what things are going to be easier to make, which are going to cut down on editing time. And, you know, he even says he takes a lot of the tasks on himself, so he doesn't have to pay someone else to do it.
That's true. That's actually an interesting point, because I think this comes up a lot. Like, well, okay, let me start over here and say that I had a film education at the University of Notre Dame, and if you have a film education, aka you take a lot of film classes where basically people sit around and talk about the stuff we talk about in this podcast, you have probably taken a good amount of training on auteur theory, which talks a little bit about that, about, you know, at what point is a piece of art somebody else's if they have people, you know, other people working on it, you know, especially with a large motion picture. Yeah, you've got a director, but you've got hundreds and maybe thousands of other artisans, especially, you know, something like a big special effects movie. That movie has touched, you know, many, many, many hands, and not just an organizational way, but really an artistic way. So where do you draw the line of who made this? And I think one of the cool things about music videos is that, like, for something like Ben Barnes stuff, you can really point to one person and say, you know, here, this is from like the point A to point Z, like, this is all Ben.
Yeah. And even in the case of, like, you know, sometimes you'll get a music video director or a music video, and, like, it's, you just see the artist's influence on it completely. You know, the director, it seemed like, might as well not even been there. And it's just the artist. It's a completely performance-based video. You know, it was like somebody had a video camera and Nelly, and they made a music video. And, you know, I think that when you've got the case where somebody's work is so recognizable and it's them from the whole kind of process, you kind of see that in every piece of the, in every element of the video.
And for people who don't know yet, the guest on today's podcast, this week's podcast, is Ben Barnes.
Yeah, for the people who, like, don't listen to what we say at all.
Exactly.
And just, like, fast forward till they hear a third voice. And they're like, okay, there's somebody else.
Well, Doug, maybe you could tell us how you, because you found Ben, you caught contact with him, and probably through his work with Y, correct?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Y. They're a really awesome band, and Ben's pretty much made all of their official music videos. I think there's some fan videos out there that are pretty nice, pretty well made, but I don't think they're all official videos. The two videos that are you'll find on the Y website are directed by one Ben Barnes, and they're really awesome. One was interestingly enough, my pick of the week last week, two weeks ago. but they're really cool. They're really awesome. What are your thoughts about these music videos? Since I found them, I definitely like them. What do you think, Adam?
They're good. I like Y on camera. Actually, first of all, we should say, and, you know, Ben mentions this in the interview, but Y. One of the videos is a dual video, which is really kind of uncommon for These Hands and January 20-something. It's actually two videos just kind of melded into one, which is really interesting. But actually, you know, coming from, and, you know, you and I, Doug, coming from a DIY perspective in terms of, you know, creating these videos, you know, all three of the ones he's directed, which are Why Sky for Shoeing Horses Under, and Why These Hands January 20-something, and Thavius Beck's To Make Manifest. And as you'll hear, they all come from a DIY perspective.
My name is Ben Barnes, and I'm a director. I have done a lot of music videos, or a few. I guess that's contradictory, but I've done some music videos. I don't do very many anymore, but I direct as much as I can, and I write as much as I can.
Now, how did you initially get into the music video field?
You know, I don't know. I honestly, I I think I when I came out here in 2001, I started working in record stores. I worked at Rhino when it still existed over on Westwood Boulevard in I guess you'd call that like before Santa Monica. Yeah, Westwood. That's what we're talking. Sorry. Anyway, and then I moved over to Amoeba pretty quickly after that. So I was the only guy that didn't have a band or wasn't a DJ at the time working at Amoeba. So you're just friends with everyone. And I just fell in love with so many different bands that I had, you know, access to. And one of my earliest friends was Lance Rock, who has gone on to become quite the household name as the human character from Yo Gabba Gabba. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that show.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, he used to work at Amoeba with me, and he had a band called The Raymakers with Chris Curtis. And so I guess that would be the very first music video I did. I had left film school, so I'd done some films before. But as far as that, you know, like when I decided, oh, I'm going to make music videos, it was like maybe a year after I'd lived out in L.A., and I just didn't know what I was going to do next. I was writing and doing different things. And so, yeah, I filmed a video for these guys for literally nothing. And it was just a sort of a thing about two guys being broke in L.A., and it was really just simple and fun, and we just shot it on one of those shitty like maybe it was a 3-chip, but it was still like I'm kind of annoyed that I fell out of film school like 8 years before the really nice, like, you know, 7Ds and 5Ds came out, because it was on some really terrible like 3CCD Sony, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was that, but it made it on some compilations and it made it around. So I guess, you know, that worked out. And then the very next thing I did was, oh, no, I guess I also did one for Daedalus. Do you know the artist Daedalus? I'm sorry, Daedalus?
Yeah, I think I'm familiar with them.
He's really big in a lot of different places. And he had this song that he did with Bus Driver and Pigeon John together. And I did a video for them. Again, for really, I mean, it was nothing. And again, on some, you know, like probably on a VX1000 or 2000, I guess 2000. And that was all 2002, 2003, I guess. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. What film school did you go to?
I went to University of Miami, actually.
Oh, no way.
I heard the Florida shout out earlier. Yeah, I went there. I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh, and I went to college at Kent State. And then at some point, I was a cartoonist, and I just wanted to sort of switch things out. I guess, you know, it was maybe 2 years into college, so I took some classes in Pittsburgh, and then applied for grad school. And at the time, there was this book that came out. I forget what it was called, but it was, you know, I mean, it was just sort of like ranking grad film schools, and University of Miami got this really sort of specifically awesome ranking that was sort of like, but it was more like they're so full of promise and they're cheap, and it was less expensive. I mean, it's still ridiculous. I if you added up all the budgets of every single music video or promo I've done, I don't think it would still equal my student loans, but it still was, it was low, you know, it was low. It wasn't NYU. You're basically, you're paying for it in the lack of contacts, but you know, it was cheaper. You were guaranteed to make a film. And I think they gave you something like 4,400 feet of 60-millimeter film free, like guaranteed, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was like, you're going to walk out of there with a film. And I did, you know. Whether I want anyone to see that film is a different story. But, you know, it was still very good, you know. It was a good experience to, like, you know, be guaranteed to make a film and not have to worry about politicking.
And when you started getting into the music videos, was there anything specific about that sort of medium that drew you to it?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, in all honesty, I don't know how old you guys are, but at one point there was, like, I don't know, let's say the late 90s. Because it was, I mean, there were some interesting things. But when like, Spike Jonze started really doing stuff, and Chris Cunningham and those kind of people, you kind of remember. I mean, I think there was this high watermark somewhere around 2000 where there was, like, you know, the Mr. Oizo video and that awesome Queens of the Stone Age video where they're being projected on the wall. I can't even remember the name of the song. But like, you, if you turn on MTV2 and they were still playing music videos, it was going to be either a shitty performance video or some really awesome art going on. I think I even remember when they were like showing the Radiohead Bleep campaign right before Kid A came out. And it was just really, it was always really awesome. So like, as a filmmaker, you sort of, you know, you're looking at films and you're making films, but I always remembered, I mean, and to be quite honest, I hate to say this, but I'm sort of bigoted against performance videos. It's very seldom that I find them very moving, but when someone sort of just makes an artistic jump, I remember most of the videos that I really reacted strongly to were concept videos, and really not concept videos where the band was performing in them, but almost straight concept, you know?
Right.
I remember come to think of it, the very first time I really was like, oh, I'd love to make a music video was when I saw No Surprises, which was a little late. It probably would have been 2001, 2002, but No Surprises is one of the best music videos I've ever seen for Radiohead.
Right. No, that's a fantastic video.
Yeah. And every time I see it, I just can't find anything wrong with it. You know, it's just I just think it's the most perfect music video, and I think the short answer would be that. Sorry to ramble, but I think honestly that would be it. I think the first time I saw that video.
Now, Doug and I are both 26, so we were definitely both watching the MTV2, you know, pretty heavily during that period. And for anybody listening who hasn't seen the Radiohead No Surprises video, I highly recommend it. I don't think we have it listed on the site, but by the time you hear this, it will be.
And what's really fun is you were about to say this, is watching, Meeting People Is Easy has a whole segment on the film that, and it makes the video even better. You know, it just makes it so much more awesome. No, because when you see him smile near the end of the video, you realize he's just happy that he made it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of the I remember after they have a little segment of some morning show somewhere showing the video and, you know, saying, oh, that's music video to slit your wrist to or something like that.
And Grant G directed the video and he directed that documentary. So it's really funny that it just really sort of, it's a beautiful companion piece in a lot of ways.
It is, no, definitely. Are you a fan of a lot of the Radiohead pieces?
I'll be honest with you. I would say unequivocally yes. And then I remember that I had the eight commercial, whatever, the eight television commercials, mm-hmm. which is the compendium of their stuff, basically for the Benz and for OK Computer. And I mean, it's wonderful. And then they had sort of something that came out more recently. It was like, here's all the videos. And I realized that, in all honesty, I really like the videos from Benz and OK Computer, and the other ones are pretty, you know, forgettable, I mean, to a T, except for maybe the Shinola Blip campaign, which was kind of fun, and most likely the video they did for Pyramid Song. Is that Pyramid Song? The one that where they go in, the figure goes into the water, and in the end sits in his own house, sits in a house.
Definitely. I think that's Pyramid Song. I can't remember specifically, but
I'm sorry. I don't mean to keep quizzing you. But
oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would say yes, but they have a great commissioner in Dilly Gent, and you know, I've heard some amazing stories too. You know, because they really did formulate their what is a Radiohead music video and what isn't. You know, like, there was some thought put into it. It wasn't just like, oh, we want to work with this person or that person. And I even heard that they were going to work with Spike Jones at one point. And the pitch sounded awesome from what I heard, but then they just couldn't do a budget. And thankfully, it ended up being No Surprises the way it was. I think I'm pretty sure Spike Jones was going to do No Surprises. And I'm really glad he didn't, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Grant G, of all people, who didn't have a track record and hasn't done many things that you'd say, oh, that's a, you know, anything very high profile. And he got to do what I think is my favorite music video ever.
It's funny you mentioned No Surprises because it's a single shot video. Mm-hmm. And then you ended up doing also a single shot video later with the Y video, a sky for shoeing horses under. Was that something you wanted to do to try with sort of like a Russian Ark-esque type a one-shot video?
You know, I'll be very honest with you. I think I was being pragmatic because, again, Y is like my favorite band in the world, and I don't I really don't mean that lightly. I really love their music, and I was a fan, and it sort of, I just lucked into being able to do it. It wasn't a pitch. It wasn't anything else. And I sort of had this idea floating around, but I'll be honest with you. I'm pretty sure it was, and then I won't have to edit anything. Like, honestly, that was part of the process was like, because I edit all my own stuff and I don't particularly love editing. And I think I just was like, it'd be really cool if we were going through the house and whatever, and we could do one take. And literally the next thought was, because then I wouldn't have to edit anything. And of course it was still 2-3 weeks of post because, you know, we blew past magic hour and had nothing in the windows. So I had to like add some special effects and stuff. So basically I was able to shift everything into production from post. Post was nothing. Post would be literally zero or maybe a couple hundred for a drive. And that way I could really just say, okay, we don't have the money, but I'm basically getting a lot of creative control. Let me just edit it, you know? But I'm not the biggest fan of editing something you've already written and directed because I feel like it becomes an echo chamber. It's like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox. Does that make sense?
That does. I'm in the same boat. I'm not a big fan of editing. I know Doug enjoys it.
Yeah, I would say I enjoy editing. That's because I get to fix all my mistakes. I did want to ask, it's funny that you say Y is your favorite band. I would say they're probably my favorite band too. I'm not going to compete with you.
Oh, no, that's awesome.
But I noticed, you know, a lot of their, the lyrics, in a lot of the Y songs, it's always like, you know, there's a big internal struggle. And you know, a lot of the videos that you've done, there's a big external struggle kind of with kind of things that are happening in actuality. Were you trying to kind of mirror the struggle that is always kind of happening in the wild in, you know, Yoni Wolf's lyrics in the video? Was that kind of a theme that you thought about?
You know, I don't know. It's very weird because I think at some point, because I worked at Amoeba and I was a fan of Yoni's projects like Cloud Dead and a couple other things for so long, and I would obsess, like, you know, like there'd be certain albums that I would just play until I literally can't hear them anymore. Cloud Dead's second album, 10, I can't even put it on anymore. I listen to it so much. And like some of that stuff would get really internal. Like some of his lyrics that I really didn't get. Like I literally don't pay attention to lyrics well enough. And then I'll read the lyric booklet and be amazed, especially at his stuff. And so like there'll be, like, I'd listen to these songs, like A Sky for Shoeing Horses Under. I understood, like, half the lyrics, so there'd be awesome lines that would pop out to me. And then the other half I wouldn't know until I read the lyric booklet and be like, oh, really, I had that pegged all wrong. But I think it's usually a mood and something to go off of. And I think if you're talking about an internal struggle coming out or sort of being extrapolated into an external one or how I'm going off the lyrics, to be quite honest, I think it's literally that it usually comes down to one or two just little snippets. Like the line, I only played chess once in my life and I lost, is like, you can't get over a line like that. It's just so like that sort of was somewhere, but I try not to be too literal about it. Cause I think it's really hard to be creative when you are thinking about it. So it's just like, all right, well, I'll let that go somewhere. And then I think the only other one was that it said, it was like Rain Goes Perfect with the Nasdaq mixtape. And for some reason I felt these people were like sheltered inside. And I, you know, it was something that I was kind of fooling around with. But I basically like his lyrics so much because they are, to me, hyper-personal and hyper. Sometimes you just go, okay, that's your thing. I really don't understand it. And because of that, it's very freeing to just enjoy it either on an abstract level or whatever. I don't know how you enjoy his music, but that's sort of where I get it. So it would always be like, well, what do I want to have accompany this music? and trying not to let the lyrics interfere too much, because then it, you run the risk of being very, like, very literal, you know, which I think is the worst kind of music video.
It's funny you mentioned that line, I played chess once in my life and I lost, because when I first saw the video, I hadn't heard the song, A Sky for Shoeing Horses Under, and one of the things that struck me is how there's little elements in both the video and the song, like that line, but also in the video and you know, several of your videos that have their little touches that really sort of stick out in your mind, even if you've watched it at one time. And for that song and that video, I think of like the bat made out of forks and knives, and you know, for these hands and the January 20 something video, just the sort of the really deadpan delivery of why. And even the sort of the older man with a lamp on the end of his gun, you know, it seems like you're working with smaller crews, and probably don't have somebody doing props and things like that. You know, where do these specific elements come from, and what is your sort of philosophy towards, you know, getting those elements in a video?
You know, I it's funny that Sky for Shoeing Horses Under was a very small budget. But it was one of those things where Yoni wanted to work with me, and that's the only way I got the job, was just that he'd somehow seen my stuff and said, "Hey, do you want to work together?" Which is a wonderful email to get. And then it literally took about 6 months for him to be in town. And at that point, because I was thinking about, oh, I want to do a video for this, I want to do a video for that, how do I stretch my budget? And literally, when your budgets are low, you start thinking really strategically, and a lot of times it's really fun. Because it usually, I'm happy with how the video came out, but literally the first couple creative decisions were, oh, this is a 2.5 minute song. Oh, I'm embarrassed to say this. This is a 2.5 minute song. If I film it at like 36 frames a second, if it's one take, it'll only be, you know, a minute and 55 seconds long, or whatever the math was. So we could fit in some shots and stuff, and then I wouldn't have to edit. I mean, like, literally those are, you know, like, but they're very focusing. So once I was like, okay, it's a one take on a short song, and we'll use my apartment and, you know, all these other things. What ended up happening was then you get to populate. Like, I did a pass through with me and the woman who is at the door with the axe. She's the fiance of the DP, but she is also a brilliant AC. And so she and I posed in all the shots that we were going to do for the one take. And so we had the camera motion down. And literally, because my director of photography was nice enough to donate his time and his lights, and I wasn't getting paid. The whole point was, like, we had a little bit of money, and it wasn't a lot, but that all went to hiring a props guy, who was, again, doing it for a favor. But basically, I said, I want a lamp gun, and he made a lamp gun. and because it was all friends, and it wasn't like a job, we made it very, like, kind of friendly. I just told two of my friends to show up wearing the same red shirt, so it looked like they worked at the same store before this shit happened, you know, and all these other things. And actually, the most unsung thing is my buddy Joel Huggins. And I don't even know if you noticed in the video, because it was one of those things where we shot on the VX 200, what is it? VX, no, not VX, HVX 200. Thank you, right? Yeah.
We shot the Sony one?
Yeah, like the one that uses DVC Pro.
Codec. I think it's the VFX 100.
Whatever, yeah, it came out in like 2007.
Yeah.
So right. we used that thing. And so it's not the most amazing resolution. And populated throughout the video are books and pamphlets, and in one case a can of chili, that all have those glowing eye guys on them. So if you look again, certain things have those glowing eye guys on them. A book on the mantle, a book by the piano, and a can of chili, and then there's other things you can't see. So the guy outside, the very first glowing eye guy you see, there's one guy who's the guy in the video feed, the monitor feed, the security camera thing, mm-hmm. The eyes that pop in the window from outside, and he's on all these other things. And, you know, of course, you can't see his face or anything, but he was like one of the main glowing eye guys, and he's populated throughout. But Boy, that was a tangent. Sorry.
No, that's attention to detail. That's major attention to detail.
Yeah, and it was like, well, let's. Well, everyone had fun with it. So everyone shows up, and it was maybe a 5-6 hour shoot at most, and we did 21 takes. But when we were getting everything ready, it was like some people made their own weapons. Like one guy duct taped a screwdriver to a crowbar, and I was like, that's perfect. Another guy put like duct tape on his glasses. And I explained the situation. And then that the man that starts the whole thing off is a fabulous actor named Burke Burns. And he was in the military. So it was like very easy to say, here's what you're going to be doing. And like, here's your position. And he, you know, he was able to just really, I think he's the heart of the thing because of one small thing, which is the shoulder shrug. Like, he does a little shoulder shrug, and, like, no one would think to do that unless you were in the military. I'm convinced of that. So I'm just saying, like, I think it was not necessarily everything where I said, I want this and I want that. It wasn't as much exacting as it was just letting people sort of add their own little things within the, you know, you just explain things really well. You know, like, here's what's happening in general terms, and then people fill in the other stuff themselves, you know?
Right, right.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. At what point does, during this pre-production process, does Y get brought in? I'm assuming that initially it's obviously stand-ins and you're not setting the whole thing up with Y sitting in the room with you. So at what point do you bring them in and kind of place them in the whole mix?
Well, you know, they were really cool. I mean, they just showed up and... Sean, who runs AndyCon, just wound up being a close friend anyway. So we were like, it's just sort of like, it wasn't even treated like a normal set. There was very little, there was very little money to make it look like a normal set. So, you know, like, but I think Y showed up, like, maybe right when the actors did, and they just figured out where their instrument placement was and everything else. But like after we did a couple run-throughs, they had to be there for that. So I mean they were there from the beginning, and they were there through the whole shoot. And I mean they would have gone again. I mean take 21 is what you see, and there were probably a couple other ones that would have worked just as well. But there was something like we're like, oh yeah, we definitely nailed it. And yeah, they rehearsed with us from the get-go. I as far as I can remember. And the other thing that's been really nice working with them is basically I have an idea and they've already sort of committed on some level to working with me. And then they just say, well, let us know your idea. And I just, you know, I showed them the little run through we did and they were like, okay, we got it. And they got in position and they tested a few things out and they tried a few things out and we tweaked a couple things, but everyone was perfect. And I mean, I don't know if you know this, but you know, Josiah, the percussionist, the brother of Yoni, he's the one at the end playing the xylophone with the glowing
eyes.
Yeah,
I was gonna ask you that actually, if that was Josiah playing it with the glowing eyes.
He didn't make a fuss at all. I mean, everyone was really happy with that one anyway when it was finally done. But I mean, Y were super cool. No one made a fuss. Everyone, you know, I mean, it was just so laid back and really nice. It just, I don't know. It didn't spoil me, but I certainly knew it was, you know, not normal necessarily. You know, it certainly wasn't very stressful. It was just, we ran through it a bunch.
So after that video, you know, the follow-up video, I think I saw an interview with the band one time and Yoni was talking about, having to, like hoist drum sets up on a roof. And then obviously after seeing the video, I understood where that took place. After that point and then being really willing to kind of be a part of what is kind of a very difficult production process, were they then more willing to kind of be a part of the next video? Did you know that they were going to be on board and you can kind of think more openly because of that?
You know, for some reason, I don't know if I assumed this, and I hope it certainly don't want to seem out, you know, like I was taking liberties, but like, the only music videos I've really done, and we can get into this at some point if it's interesting or important, but like, aside from some of the promos I did in the middle, the only music videos I've done are people or artists that came up to me and said, I want you to do a music video, and left it at that. You know what I mean? Like, really didn't give me any ideas, didn't really care. You know, just sort of were like, I want to work with you. And I mean, especially when they, because after the first video, that, you know, they came out with another album and I heard it early and I had my pick of the songs, and, you know, Yoni wanted to work with me again and I was excited about that, but I had my pick of the songs and forever it was this one song, and I'm calling Yoni up and I'm telling him this means this and this is how we're going to do it and we're doing this song, and I even shot test footage on a red of a moth at like super slow motion, and it was looking crazy cool about all, you know, all these things. And then the next time I saw him, I just was like, I want to do a video for the first two songs. And he was okay with that. You know what I mean? I totally was like, I don't want to do this. I want to do this now. Budgetarily, everything else. And he didn't blink an eye. You know what I mean? And he was getting into the idea of the first one, and he just let that other one go. You know what I'm saying? So that, I mean, it's that kind of leeway that I was very happy to have, you know?
So you said you got the songs early. Did you? Because I know that they recorded their last two albums at the same time. You didn't get them that early. Did you get the Eskimo So stuff at when Alopecia came out?
No. But I guess
the music was around.
Yeah, but they were remixing it because they had the music, but they mastered it once, and then I think they, when they were gonna do it again, they mastered it again. And I mean, I got it maybe a few months before it came out. Let's say 4 or 5. So, it wasn't the original mixes, because I remember I remember hearing a snippet of some stuff, but it wasn't. They remixed everything, so it would have been the normal release slate, like the release schedule kind of thing, where I just got it like 4 or 5 months before.
I'd like to ask you about the promos, because that's something that's interesting, because I honestly hadn't really come across promos like the ones that you've been making. They seem like almost like little mini music videos in a way. I'll see a lot of promos that are just basically like flashing colors and check out this CD coming out or whatever. I'm really interested to know, how you got into that, how that works. You mentioned, working with a label on that. Is that something that's more in conjunction with a label for promotion, or how do those sort of projects get started?
Well, I sort of fell into it by accident, but basically bus driver Reagan Farquhar came to me because he wanted me to do a music video, and the label didn't want to use me because I'd only done like 2 music videos before that, or 3 or something like that. And basically I had the Thavius Beck video and a subtitle video to go off of, and that was it. So they just were like, no, we don't want to use you. But then, he was just sort of like, well, what if I got $3,000? Like, what if we did something and I got $3,000 to make some promos? And I mean, basically, I was ripping off the Shinola Blip campaign to some degree. I was like, let's just make 30-second spots and we'll make as many as we can. And we were able, I mean, it was the best shoot they ever had. I mean, we came in under budget, and I had a schedule and everything, and got like 6 awesome little promos done, and so they were really psyched about them. And we just put them, we packaged them together as sort of like individual things. And the only frustrating thing was that with a little more planning, I probably could have turned at least one of those things into a music video if I wanted to. And a lot of the comments were like, oh, man, I can't wait for the full music videos to come out for each one of these things. And you're like, yeah, you have no idea. So after that, like, it got a little bit of attention. But again, no one knew what to do with any of it. And so people would come up and be like, hey, you should do this. And nothing really happened. And then Sony came by about doing a Peter Bjorn and John one, I think that same year. So we did that. And that was like a budget. But again, it was like, oh, whatever you want to do and however long. And I remember it was sort of long. I wanted to do a much shorter one, but they were like, oh, we like this. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, as far as the edit, because I felt like it, it's like 2.5 minutes when it could easily be like a minute. And but they were happy with it, Like, I think that was when Rick Rubin was taking over Sony. And I remember he really was like, I think he personally liked it. I was like, oh, that's, that's a small victory.
Yeah, if you've got Rick Rubin giving you the thumbs up on something, I'd say there's definitely something right going on.
That made me stop. Like, I was like, that made me stop editing. I was like, all right, fine. You know, okay, good. Yeah. I think that's services rendered. But then the bigger budget was the Coheed and Cambria ones, and that was, you know, that was the I think the first time I pulled a fee for as a director in like forever. So, you know, it was just sort of like, let's put these together. And again, it was like, it was the bastard child of the promotional process. You know, like there was a major music video and all these other things, and we were off to the side doing these things. But, you know, I had a blast, you know. They were really fun to do.
And what do you do besides music? Because you mentioned a lot of these videos were done for free. What's your day job, so to speak?
Oh, my parents are rich. No, I'm kidding. I edit a TV show out here. And then, I mean, I freelance edit. I know. It comes back around. But I freelance edit. The past 3 years, you know, doing different things, but you know, for the last year and a half, 2 years off and on, I've edited a television show about music called Beta Records TV, and it's like it airs on like NBC affiliates and stuff, and just bands come in and they perform and they get interviewed, and we air it nationally, you know, so it's kind of fun because every once in a while I'll bring in, or at least, you know, I got to bring in Baths. Do you guys like Baths?
How do you spell that?
Yeah, it sounds like an honest question, doesn't it? Do you guys like bathing? No,
I typically shower, but
yeah, exactly. No, the artist name is Bads, BHEHS. The guy's name is Will Weisenfeld. He's doing great right now. He came out with an awesome album this year, and so you know, like I didn't, you know, I wasn't making music videos, or I didn't have like the time or the heart to make a music video. So I would, you know, I made sure he came in and I directed a piece where he like. Because it's an educational show for kids, so like the only piece I ever directed and edited for the show is just him breaking down how he puts together his songs and then shows how he performs them live. So it was kind of fun.
I didn't know it was for kids. That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, like it's EI certified or whatever, but yeah, it's been sort of like the thing I do for a living for the most part to make money. And yes, it's editing.
Now
I like that you this has nothing to do with anything. You give the same voice to YouTube comments as I do, and I just want to say I appreciate that. It's really off topic, and when you gave a voice to the YouTube comment about waiting for the full length version of the video, I realized it's the same voice that I use. So thanks.
Oh,
that's my question, Adam. You're up.
Doug has a love hate relationship with YouTube comments.
It's really hard, dude. I'm not joking, man. I will post something on like Reddit or YouTube, and it's like I will read them like they matter, and then as soon as they hurt, I'll be like, "Oh man,
it feels so much worse."
Yeah, exactly, because you made them matter in the first place. I know. You're like, I did not please everybody. The guy with one shoe hates my video, and now you know, like. You don't know the mental stability of the person who hates you. Maybe they hate everything, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's like them and your high school English teacher or whoever, or your, you know, like all the bad voices in your head line up, and this fucking YouTube commenter is right there. Yeah, no, and it's always, it's like people like the Y video, especially the second one. All the comments, there are comments that are just overwhelmingly positive and so. Like, just, I was blown away by this video kind of stuff, and I'm very, like, grateful for those. And every once in a while, like, someone just says something like, Yoni needs to smile more. And you're just like, did I do it wrong?
Those bad comments end up being worth, like, 100 good comments in your heart.
Yeah, and you're sitting there going, oh, should I have made him smile? Yeah, I mean, why wasn't he, oh, and then you're like, I have no idea why, it shouldn't matter. You're a fucking grown human being, but... It works out that way.
Yes, speaking of that music video, I was wondering, you know, the first half of it for These Hands centers around a car crash, and in terms of music videos, I think that's sort of a reoccurring theme. You know, you think of things like the Coldplay Scientist music video, or even something like Adele's Chasing Pavements video that. You know, there are a lot of videos that are centered around car crashes. Because they seem to be...
and usually they have the budget to show the crash, but that's a different story.
Well, a lot of them show the aftermath specifically, because there's something about that. I was wondering, when you were making the video, obviously yours is a much different take on it. I was wondering if you had that sort of motif in your head, and if you're looking towards that and looking to kind of add to it in a way.
You know, I don't. Okay, I sort of, it's weird to me when I, because I don't seek out music videos as much as I think I should for having made them. I'm always reminded of something Kurt Vonnegut said, and this is going to get really esoteric, so you can certainly turn off your headphones off for 1 second while I get all philosophical. But he was talking about English. He's like, the best English writers aren't going to be found in English class. They're going to be chemists or architects or somewhere else. Because, and I'm trying to get the quote right, English literature shouldn't be staring up its own asshole, so to speak.
You know, that's very odd that you mentioned that, because I read this quote today.
The one I just mentioned?
Yeah, and I believe it is, the best writers at Cambridge won't be found in the English department, but the science department.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I read that, whatever book that was in. And I remember not, and that doesn't fuel my, you know, I'm not like, well, I better be awesome, so I'm not going to watch music videos. But I don't remember the canon, or I don't remember like what's gone on before. I just remember, like, to be quite honest, I usually can pinpoint a certain video as like a sprout for whatever, you know, I did, like the Thavius Beck video. I don't know if you saw that, but to be quite honest, I know it's my spin on it, but I think that's no surprises. It's, you know, it's like I was trying to build, you know, like there's something that's just no surprises. And the subtitle video was just my version, or something that my version of Imitation of Life, which is one of the greatest music videos ever made, as far as I'm concerned. Are you guys familiar with that, the REM one?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Hammer and Tongs did it, but basically it's a 40-second clip, and everyone's doing a part of the song forwards or backwards, and the video plays forwards or backwards and zooms in and out to different parts of this 40-second clip for 3 minutes, covering the entire song, and it's absolutely gorgeous. For some reason, it makes me cry almost every time I see it, and you guys should check it out. But again, like, I think that there's just sort of like, oh, I like that, you know, somehow this is gonna, I'll just eat this and see what gets crapped out. Wow, that's a terrible analogy. I'll see, you know what I mean? Like, you'll just see what the essence is, you know, if you just sort of love it and then leave it alone and don't think about it and see what it does to you. And, you know, I hope that doesn't sound too pretentious, but that's the closest I can get to where it comes from. And as far as, I think the only reason there was a car crash in that is that I was just sitting with a friend and I said something nice to them, and they made the bow and arrow motion to me, like a Cupid thing, or a, hey, you know, thanks, you know, right in your heart, love you, whatever kind of motion. And I just thought of that. I was like, what if there's a dude with arrows in his back and he's rescuing a kid from a car? I think it was a baby to begin with. And then I just changed it. And I think it's just, you know, don't think about it too hard. Just make sure it feels right, and then just do it, because it's a fucking music video. You know what I mean? You don't have to explain where the arrows went for it to work.
Ben. He's our boy.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. I'm gonna do that every time now.
You should
be more awkward each time, but we will end every interview with that horrible catchphrase. So yeah, that was sweet. I was really, really excited about that interview. It's one of the more nerve-wracking interviews going in, because of how big of a fan of Y I am. I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. When I think to myself, it's always in that voice. It's like, oh, Doug, you're pretty hungry. You should go eat something.
Sometimes you actually say that, too.
Yeah, I know. I'll say it out loud. What are you doing? It's, oh, sorry. My thought voice. Oh man, we don't know how to set people up or follow up interviews very well. We're really great at keeping these things on topic.
We are really good. And speaking of that, Langoliers, hello.
Oh man, Langoliers, holy cow. When I saw that tweet.
Do you have Netflix streaming, first of all?
I don't have Netflix streaming. Oh, I have video on demand from Xfinity.
God, no. Whatever you're paying for that, stop it, because Netflix streaming is your one-stop go-to source of just every mediocre piece of shit movie that's been made. Man. And ever.
I remember that movie so vividly. Like I remember you being so excited about renting that movie. It's like, "Oh, we should rent The Langoliers." And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. You're like, "Yeah, it was a Stephen King novel." And I'm like, okay, it might be good. No, it wasn't.
Okay, just so everybody knows, this is like 20 years ago that Doug is talking about.
Oh yeah, it wasn't like yesterday. No, we were very young. We were renting it on VHS from Blockbuster.
Yeah, it was a double VHS.
Yeah, it was, right. We're in the middle. You had to like put in the other tape. There's no graceful way to stop a movie in the middle.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, put the other part in now.
And actually, so I was flipping through Netflix streaming last night, and I was looking at, you know, you got to look at the new releases, and it's, you know, awful stuff. And actually, a few weeks ago, Michelle and I watched a video, a horror movie about these skiers that get stuck on a ski lift overnight. And so it's that goes kind of movies.
That movie wasn't good. It's a recent movie, right?
Yeah, it's called Frozen or something
yeah, like that. Brian Posehn was talking about that movie on the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. He's talking about how like he loved it. He said it was awesome.
It wasn't as bad as a lot of them, but it was.
It's like super campy, isn't it? It's supposed to be campy or something.
Yeah, it's sort of campy, I'd say.
Yeah, man, it's funny that you watch that and you don't listen to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast.
No, we just well. And the same way we stumbled upon that, I saw The Langoliers, and I was like, "This, yes, let's do this." And
the guy from
Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, Perfect Strangers, right? That's him.
Mm-hmm. Toomey. And I didn't remember hardly anything about it. I didn't know. I remember how long it was. I didn't remember what kind of quality it was, but it was awful. It was very long. It's like a 3-hour movie. Because it was originally a miniseries.
I didn't know it was made for TV. Oh, was it like several episodes?
Yeah, it was like a 4-part miniseries on ABC in 1995.
ABC really knew how to make horrible miniseries out of Stephen King novels.
Yeah, remember they did The Shining?
I was just going to say that. They did The Shining miniseries? Yeah, I do. It was so bad.
Well, because if you've ever... I used to read a lot of Stephen King books when I was in middle school, and The Shining novel is actually kind of goofy. There's like hedges that come alive. It's much more of a classic Stephen King movie. So if anybody, you know, watches The Shining, the Stanley Kubrick version, it's a lot classier than the actual book. So when they actually went through and made it for TV, I think Stephen King did it, and they actually had the hedge mazes, and it was bad.
Yeah, the Kubrick one is like a Kubrick movie. Mm-hmm. So it's got like a lot of like those elements in there that kind of carry it that aren't in the book that are just or like it's just not done that way. Yeah, it's like a Kubrick movie completely. That's my way of making a point and then babbling my way through that same point again. That's what I just did there. My pick of the week is a really great music video that I like a lot. It's by an artist called artist named Bus Driver, and the music video is "Me Time" for a song called "Me Time," and I love this music video a whole lot. It kind of reminds me of the movie Big a little bit. but only at the beginning. It's like a kid's birthday party at like a place like a Chuck E. Cheese or, you know, even like an ice skating rink with the game room. You know, just some kind of place where you would see 10-year-old birthday parties has a big game room. And in it, there's like a fortune teller machine or something like that. And, you know, one of the kids puts money in the fortune teller machine and it kind of comes to life and starts rapping the song. And it looks kind of like Bus Driver. And it's like a big kind of paper mache monster that is just kind of wreaking havoc on this birthday party while rapping this song. And I won't give away anything else.
And who is it directed by?
It's directed by Hiro Murai, who... on his list of people he's directed music videos for, he's got a long list of, you know, popular artists. And Bus Driver is pretty popular in some circles, but certainly not the pedigree of, like, Usher or B.O.B., who he's also directed for. But this is probably my favorite one of his videos. It's definitely really funny and awesome and really sticks out in your head after watching it. So check it out, Bus Driver, Me Time, Doug Klinger, Pick of the Week.
Oh, it's such a good video. That's just one of those ones. And the song is so crazy and fast that it just goes...
Yeah.
It's a perfect melding of the video with, like, the pace of the song. I really love that.
Yeah, it's really an awesome video, hence me picking it.
Okay, I'm gonna do mine.
That's usually what happens.
Had a hard time picking this video of the week, because I had a few ones in mind, but I wanted to pick one that I thought was interesting because I think it's unfinished, and the music video is "Power" by Kanye West. Have you seen this one?
It's like kind of like a slow. Like a track backwards of an image?
Yeah, it's really odd. And so the Power was the first single off of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which came out a few months ago. And when the song came out, which was over the summer of last year, or sort of late summer, they released this clip. Wasn't very long. Of just sort of the beginning of the video, and they released the longer version, which was only a minute and 43 seconds. And the song is very long; it's about 5 minutes, but it's all just one shot. It's this ridiculous composition of Kanye West like walking forward through a hall. It's very reminiscent of like a I don't know what period of painting. I took an art history class, and I can't remember what period of painting this is reminiscent of. But like a Rembrandt or Renoir or something like that. Wait, those are two totally different periods. I can't even remember the name. Anyway, it's a like a painting tableau. There's albino models. There's a woman with wings. It's all symmetrical. But basically, it's just one image that just keeps being pulled back. And you keep seeing these ridiculous things. And it's pretty obvious that they kind of either ran out of money or ran out of time or something like that, or just couldn't figure out how to keep it going.
Or ridiculous ideas,
yeah.
All right, let's just put these regular hot girls in here now. It's like, well, I mean, unless you're going to get more albino chicks, what's the point?
Yeah, the woman's name who's the albino woman, I think, is either... It's Irana Shayek, but anyways, it was directed by Marco Brambilla, and at the end they kind of like zoom into different parts of the image, and then it just says "Power," the name of the song, and it's like at the end of the first verse. But you can tell by the actual sort of composition, everything that's going on, that it probably took a long ass time just to get what they got there. So anyway, I haven't been able to find a good answer of why it's sort of like a half video, but it's as a video, I think it's really interesting and really cool. It's something that Kanye West doesn't do a lot. I mean, he does a lot of really interesting things musically, and obviously, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was, you know, really, you know, boundary pushing album. But for a lot of his music videos, I've kind of been disappointed. So it was really good to see him doing something a little bit out of the box for this one.
Yeah, it's really it's a big it's a comment on the industry when like a Kanye West video may have ran out of budget. It's like the biggest artist of the time. Yeah, we only have enough for half of his music video. If this is what you want to do, that's it. Either speaks to the where the money is in music videos, or it speaks to how intense that music video is.
Well, I'm looking up the See, Kanye tweeted, "It's not a video; it's a moving painting," which is true. They have, if you look at the screenshot.
Yeah, but it's just a Kanye West thing to say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, any of his videos, it's not a video, it's an experience of life. Like, that's just a stupid Kanye thing that he would say. You know, like, he always says these, like, things that seem like they should be deep, but when they come from somebody who has, like, Venetian blinds for sunglasses, it just sounds arrogant.
Well, actually, the video, that you know, a lot of the poses and the people and things like that, they're all references to things that you and I would not get at all. There's things you have to kind of look up, but it did win the iTunes Video of the Year of 2010.
What are some of these references that you're speaking of?
I just looked at it. I had read a few of them before. I couldn't pull them up off the top of my head, so I opened up the Wikipedia page. The sword that is hanging over Kanye West's head is apparently the sword of Damocles.
Yeah, I totally picked that one up.
Uh-huh. The various figures within the painting are presented in poses similar to major arcana and minor arcana.
Yeah,
you were right on top of that. You were
Yeah, right. I got there, if not right at the same time, a split second after.
I mean, like, well, that's the only thing, though. And I don't know. Do you guys make music videos?
I've made one, and Doug has made a few, but nothing